Sasquatch is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the so-called knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject. Information, visit sasquatch.com. This is Sasquatch, a podcast about Bigfoot, and I am one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove, and I'm joined tonight by my friend Mark Matsky.
Hello there.
This week we got a letter, and I put the call out a few weeks ago on Facebook about sending in letters. And we got a letter that I think warrants an entire episode. So this is going to be a very skeptical episode of the show because this letter is skeptical. And we're going to try to address things that the letter writer brings up. And some of these things I may agree with and some of them I may not. But I think it's good to get more of a skeptical episode in here because both of us have said it. I know I have. I'm not a 100% stone cold believer in Bigfoot. So this letter was sent to sasquatchmail@gmail.com, which is our very professional sounding Gmail address. So if you want a letter, want us to read your letter, send it to that email address and we might read it on the show. Before we get started, I haven't talked to Mark in like, what is it, over a week? It's like 2 weeks at this point.
Yeah, 2 weeks or more.
Cool. Yeah, you were on Bigfoot vacation.
We were, yes, we were in the Great White North, up in Quebec, north of Ottawa, Ontario, and It's really squatchy territory, if I may say so, but no sightings of any kind. All we heard were a lot of loons. A lot of
people,
loons.
The cool thing is, Bigfoot calls. Yeah.
the actual bird.
Okay.
And the thing about that that's really fun is that you can get in a canoe and sort of sneak up on a loon and get pretty close, and then they figure out you're there and they dive, and then they come up 100 yards away. So I did 10 days of loon hunting. Wow. It was pretty good. I needed it. I can tell you that.
We all need some sort of vacation. Okay, so we got this letter. We now know how Mark's vacation went. So we're all caught up.
Yeah.
On Mark and I, but this is a short show. This is how we do things. So we're gonna get right into the topic. Which this is a letter that was sent by a listener of the show. His email address called him Zed Zeddy. I'm just gonna guess that wasn't his actual name. I don't think there was any name beyond that.
It must not be the Zed Zeddy I know.
I guess not. So thanks for this letter, Zed. We're going to go through this letter. He actually did this very nicely for us. So there's a series of questions, and we're just going to address them one by one. But first, he starts out, "How's it going, bro? Love the podcast so far. Wish it was an hour long, but hey, what the heck? This is my first time sending in questions to a Bigfoot podcast. I come at this from a skeptic's point of view, but would like to believe something is out there, which is what I think a lot of people do. So when reading the questions, bear that in mind. I was a police officer for 17 years, so I can tell you when it's time to call BS, which about 95% of is nowadays. His first question, why does it seem that all the so-called Bigfoot investigators fight over their beliefs, areas of investigations, and the I'm the only true investigator aspect of all of this? Now, Mark, I think you're going to like this question because he nailed right at the beginning of it something that bothers you, which is the beliefs and areas of investigation, all that stuff. So I'm going to let you tackle this first.
All right. It's a good question. It really is. And we can get pretty philosophical with it if we want to. After reading the letter, you know, the first thing that came to my mind was that's human nature. Now, no one thinks of Bigfootery as an institution, but it is kind of. I mean, it's a gathering of people around an idea or a pursuit. And whenever that happens, whenever you get a group of people gathered around any interest, what ends up happening is that orthodoxies develop. Or if you don't like the word orthodoxies, we could say non-negotiables develop. You know, let's say there's a group of ladies who get together and they like to quilt. They will come up with certain non-negotiables that this is how you do it. And if you go outside of the lines of that, then you're probably going to be looking for a new quilting group to join. Or musical style is the same thing. I'm part of a barbershop harmony society chapter. Oh, and if I went in there and said, hey, you know, let's do some Van Halen this week, they would probably say no. And someone would, you know, take me by the elbow at the break. And because that's what happens when you get people together, is non-negotiables develop. And the same holds true in the Bigfoot field, I think, is that you get segments of people who say, this is what Bigfoot has to be. We've decided that this is it. And you see fractures happen along those lines then. Groups fragment, and because they have incompatible non-negotiables, they feel like, well, we can't continue in this together. So I think that's sort of at a deeper level what's going on, is that it's just human nature to say, I want to be the one who breaks this story first and gets the real goods. And historically, if you look back on the Bigfoot search in the Great Pacific Northwest with, you know, the major players like John Green and Rene DeHinden and Ivan Marks and all those guys, they were working together, but in a way they weren't working together. And I think that that's nothing has changed.
This is nothing new. This has been the way this field has been, just from my reading into the history of it. This has been the way things have operated since the early days of Bigfoot, quote-unquote, research.
Genius, expert at anatomy, and very inventive and original thinking. He had to be outclassed me in those areas, and I don't think anybody outclasses me in those areas, at least not since Leonardo da Vinci. And so such a person, I'd say, is impossible. Therefore, the tracks were real.
As I tell people, he reminds me of a dog, which you want to pet him and be nice to him, and he sneaks away, you know, you give him a piece of meat and you want to go closer and he goes away. Finally, you get so pissed off, you just want to kick him. You know what I mean? Just, you can't make friends with him, and he just annoys you so much. You know, look, in all fairness, I dedicated my life to this, and this, as we all know it here, I think, every one of us, if this damn thing exists, it's the biggest scientific discovery the world might have ever seen, right? I mean, it would be mind-boggling, the implication in so many fields, that would blow your mind, that would, some people, you know, it's Mickey Mouse stuff. But I truly think that Kranz, you know, you can, Green always says of Kranz, every time he falls in the hole, Green says, oh, poor Grover, he is so gullible. You know, after the 25th time when he falls in the same hole, you kind of wonder about the guy. And, you know, what?
I would say, I don't think he says all Bigfoot investigators, and I don't think that's the case. I do know guys that aren't like that. I think most of the people that aren't like that, though, they're probably not the guys that are in the spotlight. So, I mean, I can think of a lot of guys off the top of my head, but I'm not going to name names of guys who are not, you know, who don't operate this way. I will say, when I was first getting into Bigfooting, you'll probably hear me come back to the Facebook group thing multiple times throughout this episode, but when I was first getting into Bigfooting, I once tried to join a Facebook group, and I was told that I could not join this group unless I was a true investigator. That's what he said, a true field investigator. I was not allowed to be pro-kill.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? There's one more thing. I was a flesh and blood, 100%. I had to be flesh and blood, or I wasn't allowed in their group. And which I am, but nonetheless, to tell me that annoyed me automatically. Right. Don't tell me that I have to be what you want me to be.
Yeah. Well, see, non-negotiable, right? I mean, you got to be that or you're out.
Right. You have the opposite end of the spectrum, too, which is the people who, you know, who want to hug their brother Bigfoot. And the Bigfoot's here to just mind speak with us and hug us all. And we're not allowed to ever try to take a picture of one. So anyway, yeah, it's an odd thing, and it's gone on forever. And it was a real weird adjustment when I was coming into this field. And I imagine anyone who's a newbie, I got to come up with a better word because that's starting to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Anyone who's just coming to this, I don't know. This is not the most welcoming of communities. So just, you know, if I were going back to the beginning again, I would not probably join most Facebook groups. That'll turn you off right there. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, and you know, to leaven that a little bit, I would say that everybody who I have met personally in the community has been really very cool. You know, very pretty. I haven't really run across anybody who has, you know, initially come across as a strong personality or not welcoming.
Yeah. But, local especially.
Yeah.
I haven't run into that locally. I can't think of anyone locally off the top of my head that's been like that. Next question. We're going to move through these. Why are there experts in this field?
I'm the Bigfoot hunter. I'm a Bigfoot expert. That's what I do. I spend all my waking hours finding this creature that people don't believe in.
Here's a headline. There's been nothing found yet. How can you be an expert of something that so far doesn't exist? So this is kind of along the same lines as the last one. The thing that I thought of, and I'm just going to say this and you can agree or disagree, it seems to me the guys that declare themselves experts are typically the guys that are faking evidence. I mean, the only way to really claim that you're an expert is to be faking stuff that people don't think they can get somewhere else, and then claim that you're the one that came up with it. So I don't know of... I've never heard, in fact, I've directly heard him contradict that statement. Like, I've never heard Meldrum refer to himself as an expert. I've never heard Mark DeWerth or any of these guys, and they will flat out say there's no experts. There are no experts. Will Jennings says that.
That's an excellent point. I think anybody who would announce themselves as an expert probably isn't, because it's such a humbling sort of endeavor. You know, it's
a guy named... his last name started with a D and ended in ire, and he referred to himself as like an expert Bigfoot tracker.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Encounter with Bigfoot.
This big thing was 75 feet away from me.
In 2009, San Antonio dispatchers couldn't believe their ears. A 911 call from a homeless couple camping near Highway 151, reporting a Bigfoot in the woods with them.
Smells awful. Devoured a whole deer carcass.
That news story that you covered, that's what let the cat out of the bag.
Bigfoot hunter Rick Dyer says our report prompted him to head to Texas, where he tracked down the Sasquatch and shot not one, but two of the beasts.
There's no allegedly about it. I shot and killed the beast there.
If Dyer's name sounds familiar to viewers, it's because he made Ken's TV news for other reasons in 2011. Police arrested him for defrauding folks on eBay for allegedly selling them Corvettes he never delivered. But Dyer's real fame comes among the Bigfoot hunting community, where he is known for a Sasquatch hoax in 2008 that gained international attention. He says he's on tour now with his latest kill to restore his reputation.
It's just impossible to be faked, and I don't have the budget to fake it if it could be done.
His exhibit is called the I Told You So Tour, and Dyer says it's in the Texas Panhandle now with stops in Houston, Austin, and San Antonio planned. According to news reports, stops in Arizona and parts of New Mexico have fallen flat, with venues refusing to hold his exhibit. So what exactly is in the glass enclosure? Dyer says it's an 800-pound, 8-foot creature stuffed and mounted, a new species. From head...
His head, as you see, is almost 3 times
right. Yes, there was.
All right, we got to jump to the next one. Why is the PG film considered to be real? Now, here we go. By now, everyone knows the story behind it. As far as the suit and the people behind the making of it, Then you have an expert, Dr. Meldrum, come in and say it is real. Okay, you start to have believers. Then he backs Mr. Standing and his Blinky videos. Come on. Now you're so-called expert. Okay, I'm just going to cut it off there.
Okay.
Here's the thing about the PGF. There is no suit. They've never produced a suit. So if you can produce a suit, I would actually be thrilled to learn that we have solved that mystery, because that video bothers me to this day. Because I there's things about it I love and think, my goodness, you know, that is a real Bigfoot. And then there's things about that video that drive me crazy. And I'm like, well, why is it just walking away like a nice leisurely stroll across a meadow? But then you listen to Gimlin talk about it like we did. And mm-hmm. you're like, well, the guy's not lying. Mm-hmm. And we've mentioned the PGF in almost every episode now, by the way. But I have a hard time declaring that the PGF is a fake. Every recreation of it that I've seen sucked. I've never seen a human in a suit duplicate the movement. I've never seen a suit that duplicated Patty. So,
It has all the earmarks of being a guy in a suit. Generally, what we would build is a two-layered suit. We would have a musculature underneath where the muscles are actually separate pieces sewn together so they can slide up against each other the way muscles would on a real person. And then on top of that, the fursuit goes on as a separate layer. So we get some kind of sliding in between the fur and the muscles that does tend to look more natural.
What about the locomotion? Do you think it looks like a guy walking along, or is there something more to it?
To my mind, the movements of this creature are nowhere near as dramatically different as a man playing a gorilla or a chimpanzee. You're talking about very, very different body language, very different style. And so if a human being can master that type of movement, he can certainly master this that much easier. And I think an amateur would be able to achieve this kind of locomotion very easily.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that it's been proven a fake. I would be interested in hearing what that proof is. There's a couple of things. One of the problems that you mentioned is produce the suit, show us. I mean, there's anecdotal stories about people opening their trunk and they see something in there and they say, well, that's the suit. But that's not proof. That's just somebody telling you that's what happened. The other thing is, I've done more reading than I should admit to on the type of debunking the PG books that are out there, like Long's book and so forth. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I can think of at least probably three or four people who have said, I was the guy in the suit.
He gave me the signal. He was sitting on my horse that he took down there. So he took the camera and kind of went like that. As you can see, the film is shaky. He started walking out across there. And I walked, I don't know how many yards it was. And I turned, the old Bigfoot look, and looked at him and went on. All this time, waiting for a bullet to crack through my butt.
Well, come on. I mean, that in itself, that begs a question. It can't be four people who were in the suit. Somebody has to be
there.
Telling
They could squeeze in there like one of those horse costumes, like the horse costume where there's like one guy at the end and another guy at the front.
Right.
But it's like four guys standing on the shoulders.
So, yeah, somebody was on somebody else's shoulders.
But it's a...
I get it.
The costume, I think they figured out that Patty wasn't that tall, right? She's like 7 foot, 6 foot 8, something like that.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. maybe like four... like really small children or four midgets even. I think we just solved the PGF mystery.
Okay. I'm gonna go over to the stabilized video, be right back.
We just offended half the people listening to the show. Next question. Who are the top investigators in this field? By now, everyone considers themselves to be the one. That's the problem, since Finding Bigfoot, the show, everyone wants their 15 minutes of fame. Who are the top investigators? Now, I don't know if he's being serious here. Like, is he just saying, who are the top investigators? Or if he's asking a rhetorical question or what this is.
Yeah.
So,
well, maybe serious, because he does say investigator,
right,
and not expert, which is clearly a problematic word by now.
Exactly. Allow me to blow more smoke at the NAWAC, but in my opinion, just because that's the organization that I've followed the closest in terms of, who I will actively read anything they post. I'm very interested in everything that goes on there. I think those guys have a lot of really intelligent men and women in their group. Alton Higgins is one of the guys that that runs that group, and I think he seems like a really intellectual, intelligent, just smart guy. And another one, I don't think she's in the NAWC, but she's involved. Kathy Strain, I'm a big fan of hers, even though I have not actually gotten to speak to her. At some point, we got to get her on the show. That'd be fun. Let me think. You know, I'm with Lyle. Do you think Lyle Blackburn would consider himself an investigator? I think he does.
Yeah, I think
researcher.
He would.
I mean,
the way he writes his
him.
Books is that he goes on site. I mean, that's investigation.
That's the type of investigation that John Green did, and that's what mm-hmm. we need. Mm-hmm. So I think those three right there are probably my top. There's other guys I could talk about yeah. that I'm a fan of. I really like everything I've seen from Mark DeWorth locally. Mark Mazel. I mean, there's a lot of, in Ohio alone, there's a lot of intelligent, skeptical, you know, they're not going to run out there and call everything a Bigfoot. In fact, anything I've learned about tracks, I've probably learned from Mark DeWorth. He'd probably be on my list, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to state that right now because I don't want him to get a big head. So, what about you?
Well, even though it seems like exposure is something that is, you know, casting a little bit of doubt on the individual, I do think Cliff Berichman, mm-hmm. you know, he says on a number of occasions, and I believe him entirely, that he would do this whether he was on Finding Bigfoot or not. Mm-hmm. And I think he does spend an awful lot of time out in the field. I mean, if that's the type of investigation that we're talking about, I think he's out there while they're taping and he's out there while they're not taping. And, you know, I'm sort of a Lauren Coleman guy. And the thing, he's not an investigator out in the field very much these days, especially with some health issues that he's been dealing with. But, you know, since the 60s, he's been in the field gathering reports, going to places that have various reputations for sightings. And he's kind of set the tone, I think, for gathering information and encouraging people. And if you read his books over and over again, especially in the introductions and epilogues, he's encouraging people, go out and do this yourself. You know, find these places, take a notebook, take a recorder of some kind, and actually look at these places yourself and talk to people if you can track them down. He produces a whole bunch of lists at the end of his book, Mysterious America, to get you started. And at this point, I think, you know, as a somewhat of a elder statesman, he still continues to encourage people to get into the search yourself. So I kind of resonate with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, probably, in all honesty, probably the top investigators in this field, we don't even know who they are. I mean, I'm just going to guess it's the mm-hmm. guy who goes out and, you know, has his scientific method he's following and, you know, is doing everything he can and going out as much time as he can, and probably no one knows who he is. I mean, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. what I'll say. The next question, does everything have to be a Bigfoot? From Bobo on Finding Bigfoot to your last guest from the Bigfoot Show podcast, that's Brian Brown. Every shadow, every hoop, every sound has to be a Bigfoot. Come on, people, give it a rest already. All right, in Brian's defense, Brian is one of the more skeptical people I've heard talk about the Bigfoot. I don't think Brian necessarily declares everything to be Bigfoot at all. And even guys like Bobo and Cliff, as they're portrayed on the show, from what I understand, that is not the, you know, the reality of the way they are when they're in the field. I think probably you got to think when they're on that TV show, I'm sure they're cutting that thing to make it look like, you know, everything is a Bigfoot.
Right. I mean, there's hours and hours of footage that mm-hmm. they take for each show, and we get less than 40 minutes. But
having said that, there are people who I see it on Facebook every day, people posting sounds of barred owls and coyote howling and telling us mm-hmm. it's a Bigfoot, and people taking pictures of stumps and saying this is Bigfoot, and people taking a picture of the fern behind their house and saying he's cloaking, people blowing smoke in front of a camera and saying that's the Bigfoot, you know, going into Dimension Z. So that does happen. I mm-hmm. understand what he's saying, and it drives me insane.
Yeah, hoaxing would be a topic of a pretty good episode, I think.
You know, that would be a good one. I think we might do that episode next, even.
Amazing.
You're incredible. Did Bigfoot put that thought in your mind just now?
He project, yeah.
All right.
Actually, earlier when I was sitting on a stump.
That was Bigfoot. You were sitting on him.
He didn't reveal himself to me.
It was a Bigfoot, or it was four midgets in a costume cloaking. Okay, last question. More than one sighting? Come on. Right off the bat, you lost me there. The moment someone says they have had more than one sighting, you're done. Heck, you should go to Vegas, because you're the luckiest jerk I've met. I'm editing this a little bit. So,
I live in a cabin in the forest, and they're here all the time. And I interact with them, and about, I would say, five or six people have visited me here, and they've seen them, and at times they've even talked to them as well telepathically, because they're not an animal or a monster.
I agree to an extent here. I am skeptical of people who tell me they've had more than one sighting. There are exceptions. And they've told me, and they've told numerous guys that are out in the field looking for these things a lot. If they're, I don't know, there are, I'll just say this, there's exceptions to every rule. And I do think there's probably some exceptions to this one, but I will say I am very skeptical when someone starts telling me about their encounters. Mm-hmm. You know, you tell me you've had a sighting. Okay. When you start saying I've had sightings, I get a little leery. I'm like, well, okay. Because, you know, I mean, Rene DeHinden was searching for Bigfoot for how long and never saw one. So,
right.
Did John Green, has John Green even seen one? I don't think John Green did.
No, he didn't. Not to my knowledge. DeHinden didn't even find a track himself.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know, gosh, the thing about that is, the only question I have is, what about habituation cases? I mean, because does that discount every habituation case? Or, because I mean, I agree, somebody like me who would say, certainly I've seen Bigfoot, you know, numerous times as I do my 1 mile loop hike through Salt Fork State Park.
As I'm in the Metro Park by my house.
But, you know, it's another thing entirely with some of these reports of people who live, you know, sort of off the grid, and they have something that comes around maybe during certain seasons and things like that. I think you have to give a little credence to those reports.
Sure, sure. Yeah, the Browns, actually, like Wes Germer was talking about on the show, I think they kind of have a similar situation going on out there. And there's been some amazing footage shot on their house. Not literally the Bigfoot was on their house, but on their property. So, yeah. No, I see what you're saying. That's true. Like I said, I think there's exceptions to this one, but for the most part, I'm in total agreement. I'm definitely in agreement. And once you hit more than two, then I'm really, I mean, whew, you know, let me tell you about my 10th Bigfoot sighting.
Right.
And this time he was riding a roller coaster at Cedar Point while I'm out. I mean,
yeah,
you lost me at 10.
Right. Well, and also, so, you know, when somebody comes along with the claim, like, I know where to look for them, you know, and I can take you exactly, and if you just stay still in this place, you'll see one. I mean, those type of claims really
touch you. Yeah. They'll mind meld with you.
And the warning flags go up at that point.
Yeah.
No doubt.
For sure. Okay. Join the conversation at facebook.com/sasswhat. Find us on Twitter by using the hashtag sasswhat, or you can find me on Twitter at SethBreedsLove. Mark Matsky is on Twitter at Reverend Matsky. Send your letters to sasswhatmail@gmail.com and leave us a rating and review on iTunes.